In 1972, the world's greatest rock band, Led Zeppelin, were touring the world. They were in Sydney in February, and they played at the Sydney Showgrounds. And photojournalist Ted Harvey was there on the day. And nearly 35 years later, I'm talking to Ted, who has an exhibition of the photographs that he took of Led Zeppelin at that concert. Good afternoon, Ted.
Hello.
Now, Ted, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the actual Led Zeppelin concert in 1972 and the band, can you just give us a little bit of background about yourself and where you were at in 1972?
In 1972, I worked as a freelance photographer covering a lot of the rock concerts that came through Sydney. In the summer of 71, 72, we had bands like Pink Floyd, Deep Purple, Free, Jethro Tull, Cat Stevens, Elton John, Rolling Stones, even the Kinks came through. So there was a lot of music being produced and a lot of concerts that we're able to go to. It's a good time to be listening and enjoying music and to be photographing bands.
So these were some of the major rock bands in the world at the time. They were all coming down here to Australia, were they?
Yes, the rock bands, especially the English ones, really seemed to enjoy Australia. When Led Zeppelin came down, a couple of the members were only 24, Robert Plant and John Bonham were about 24 years old. That were really on a roll when they came to Australia, and they just enjoyed being here. It was like the UK or like England, except exotic. They could understand Australian. It was like England transported to the other side of the world, and they really had a good time. They really enjoyed themselves.
So, Ted, you were a photojournalist. Who were you taking photographs for? What sort of publications?
Well, the major music papers of the day, Planet, Music Maker, some of my work appeared in a magazine called Go Set, but only occasionally they had their star photographer. The Bulletin quite often used my photos, The Herald. I took other stuff as well, Dolly, Pole, Bell, a whole range of magazines and books used to publish my work.
And were you specialising in music, rock groups, or were you doing other types of photography as well, like fashion photography?
Well, fashion was about the only thing I really didn't get into, mainly bands and PR, and so I really enjoyed the bands in the 71-72 period. And the difference between the bands now and then is you know, you had easy access to them, and they were the same age as you were, and you could meet them and have a beer in the pub with them and, you know, wander around the cross or whatever. I did that with Led Zeppelin. I met them at the reception, press reception, drinks night, and had a good chat to them, and later visited them in the hotel, gave them some of the photographs from the concert, and then went for a walk around the cross with Robert Plant.
Now, can you just tell us how old were you in 1972?
I was around about 22, around just a couple of years behind the guy. So we're all young and energetic, and, you know, life was good. It was a good time, and Led Zeppelin were making the music as they went. They were on a roll. They'd just released Led Zeppelin 4, which is an untitled album, the four symbols. And, they were really rocketing along. This is the first album that was well accepted by the press in England, although Led Zeppelin were really appreciated in Australia and America and by the audiences in the UK. The press had knocked them, but this one was really getting traction.
Many would argue that the albums Led Zeppelin 1 through to 4 still stand as the absolute pinnacle of rock music.
Yes, I think you're right with that. And number 4 actually went on to be the fourth biggest selling album in the world ever. So they really knocked it on the head. They knew it. They were full of energy. And John Paul Jones said the energy coming from the band was palpable at the Sydney show. They just were just so full of energy. They loved playing, and they just went for it. It was a fantastic time, a fantastic show, and I was very fortunate to be able to photograph the show right from the very start when they ran on stage right to the closing moments.
So Led Zeppelin were the biggest band in the world, and how did you get the gig as the photojournalist to get such access to the band? Tell us the background to getting the gig. And then tell us about the lead-up to it, the experience of going there.
Well, getting access to any of the concerts was very, very easy in those days. I went there on a freelance basis with maybe the Planet publishing the photos, but in the end they didn't end up doing it because they'd just done a big feature article on Led Zeppelin playing in Melbourne. So they didn't actually get published at the time. But getting to the show was very easy. I just went to the showground, drove my van in through the doors. One of the stewards was there to control the traffic, and I just said, I'm with the band, showed him my press pass, drove straight in and parked behind the stage and walked around the front and ready to take photos. It was that easy. It wasn't difficult. It's not like today. They tell me it's a little bit harder today.
Just to get technical for a second, what kind of camera were you using?
Well, I had a range of cameras for all different sorts of jobs, but I think this particular camera, going back, trying to remember and talking to my brother about it, was probably a Pentax, and I probably had a Tamron zoom, 85 to 210. It was handheld, and they've come out pretty good.
So 35mm?
Yes, 35mm film. I took three rolls of black and white and one roll of transparency colour film.
Okay, so the first thing that surprised me when I walked into the exhibition here at the S.H. Irvin Gallery is the scale of the photos. You've blown them up pretty big and they do look sensational. And we're standing in a corner of the exhibition here, which you are telling me is the opening song of the concert, The Immigrant Song. Tell us what happened and how you felt and how the audience reacted when Led Zepp took the stage.
Well, Led Zeppelin really did take the stage. They ran on the stage. Robert Plant, John Bonham, Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones, and they ran on to the stage, plugged their instruments in and just went for it. Well, actually, Robert did say a few words, but they got launched into the Immigrant Song, which is their opening song that they used for quite a number of years at concerts. A very powerful pounding bass section, rhythm section, and also wailing voice of Robert's over the top. Now, when the song started, the audience were back behind a concrete wall. And I was down the front, I had plenty of free movement around the stage, and I thought, this is great. And the next thing I knew, I was surrounded by a sea of people. They'd all just stormed the wall and ran forward in the singing of the Immigrant Song. And I've got some photos here. They're amongst my most favourite. One I'm just looking at now is Jimmy Page and John Bonham really going for it, and that serious guitar look on Jimmy Page's face, just absolutely pounding into the Immigrant Song.
Now, you look like you're really close. You could even be on the stage with them. Where were you when you took these photos of Jimmy Page?
Well, believe it or not, that is taken with a telephoto lens. I was down the front. The stage was pretty makeshift sort of affair, really. It was just scaffolding. And believe it or not, they actually had an old army tent over the top. To keep the weather off. It had signs of the Second World War, I think. It was a disposal shop tent. But so I was towards the front, but far enough away to get a good perspective on it. And they're all telephoto shots. And that is my favourite shot, the one we're looking at the moment. Jimmy Page and John Bonham screaming out, thumping away.
Ted, tell us about this whole series of Jimmy Page going for it on the guitar.
Yeah, this is one of my favourite series. It's Jimmy playing guitar, and he's really playing it seriously and getting right into it. There's his hairs flying in some of the shots. He's bending down and really all over the place with the guitar, really thumping away at the rhythms and the chords. And, yeah, just a good shot. One of the shots in particular is interesting because it actually has the showground board in the background. It says the Royal Easter Show 1972 is coming, and the Royal Easter Show was starting just a few weeks later in April. Robert Plant made mention of the fact when the crowd stormed over the fence and went to the front, he said, "Now sit down," which the crowd did, and he said, "Don't come any further." and if it rains, we stop playing, and if you come closer, we stop playing. And he said, leave the grass in a good condition because there's going to be some cows in here in the next couple of weeks.
That's very thoughtful of him. I mean, the Easter, the Sydney showground was right in the centre of Sydney and was definitely a place that Sydney congregated for the Easter show and for sport and for rock music back then. It was definitely very much at the heart of Sydney's culture, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, especially for musical events. That the Sydney showground and Randwick Racecourse were the two venues that bands went to. If they were going to attract a big crowd, that's where they went to.
Just before the concert, were you hanging out with the guys at all? Were they aware of your presence there as a photographer?
Well, not on the day of the show. They drove in, there was a caravan at the back of the stage, and then they ran on stage. But actually, when John Paul Jones was plugging in, he looked at me, I took a photo, he sort of stared straight at me, and I took a colour shot of him as he's plugging in. So I guess they were aware that I was down the front. And I did meet the guys, I think, about 5 days earlier at a press reception, and had a good talk to John Paul Jones and chatted with Robert Plant and Jimmy Page.
Were you shoulder to shoulder with other photographers, or were you there on your own?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I used to see a lot of photographers at most of the concerts I went to, and strangely enough, thinking back on it, I couldn't remember any. I found out since I've discovered the negatives, there was one other chap there, and he got pushed right to the front of the stage, and his photographs had a lot of microphones, and he really couldn't do a lot. I was sort of in a privileged position, and with the telephoto lens I couldn't move because there's people everywhere around me, but I was actually quite fortunate to be stuck in the spot I was. There were some newspaper photographers there, but they actually photographed the crowd, not the band. They aimed their cameras towards the crowd because there was a record number of young people at the concert.
How many people were there?
Well, officially it was about 28,000, but there was more like 36,000 people at the concert. A lot of people had scaled the fence. One chap told me he had spent the morning building a ladder, and when he got there, there was actually two others that were better, so he used one of the other ladders and discarded his own. He went over the wall.
Those were the days. If you try that these days, you'd probably end up in detention, wouldn't you?
Yes, you would, yeah. Yeah, this chap actually, when he was inside, saw me in the inner circle of the concert, and he said, yelled out to me, he said, can I borrow your press pass? And I actually passed it over to him, and they took so little interest. It was the so-called security were really stewards at the showground, and they just let him through, so he joined the inner circle.
Oh, yeah? Oh, make mention of Reg Mombassa's interpretation. A number of artists have put in their work for this show, interpreting some of your work and interpreting Led Zeppelin and their music. And Reg Mombassa has done a version of Jimmy Page.
Well, I really like this image of Reg Mombassa. It's a really classic Mombassa image. It's of Jimmy playing the guitar. Going for it. It's just a fantastic image, and he's called it Man Plays Guitar.
And Jimmy Page is wearing a fantastic shirt, isn't he? And a great pair of jeans.
Yes, wore some very colourful clothes and some very tight jeans in those days.
Now let's go over and have a look at the series over here of Robert Plant in his full glory. Tell us about the presence that Robert had on stage. And of course, he famously has the loudest voice in rock music. Was that the sensation that you had when you were there?
Well, yes, the band was very loud. Up until that date, there were some loud bands, but they actually had equipment. It was the largest amount of equipment that we'd ever seen in Australia. Some of it they brought in, some of it they got locally, and the sound was superb, and it was very loud. Robert had a stage presence he was only, as I say, probably about 24, but he was controlling the crowd. They were really on a roll, and he was very professional. He was good to photograph because lots of classic poses, and I can anticipate what he was going to do. And I've got some absolute classic Robert Plant images of him singing on stage. And some of John Paul Jones really getting into it. He was a pretty cool customer, but there's one shot I'm looking at the moment where he's really getting into the bass playing with a vengeance.
Now, a lot of Robert Plant's poses here, looking at it 35 years later, we would say these are almost cliched rock poses, but in a way, Robert Plant was the inventor of the rock pose, wasn't he? I mean, when you were looking at this back then, 35 years ago, it probably would have been very new and sensational to see a man behaving like this.
Yes, it was. They were just so good and such a classic visual band as well as the sound. And with the showground, so many people were so far away, but you could actually see Robert jumping around the stage, really going for it.
I mean, he looks very physical in his performance. He almost has the body and moves of a dancer.
Well, yes, that's what a lot of people have said. Some of his moves were just so great. People have actually asked me, was he a professional dancer? But he wasn't, but he was an absolute natural at performing.
And he's over here, he seems to be on the amp stack. Is he taking photos of the, or looks like possibly Super 8 film of the crowd?
Yes, what Robert's doing there is, during the Led Zeppelin show, which went for 3 hours, they used to have breaks or contrasts. They'd start with some very heavy music, they'd go into an acoustic set, and I remember John Paul Jones saying he appreciated the chance to sit down and do the acoustic set, also a bit of a rest for them. And the photo we're looking at now is of Robert Plant filming with a Super 8 movie camera. He's filming the crowd. And this happened when John Bonham was playing Moby Dick. Moby Dick went on for about 23 minutes at the Sydney concert. It was quite a mammoth effort. And Robert, just as you can see, he's got a cigarette in his hand, just a filter tip cigarette, just quite relaxed, and walked to the side of the stage, the right-hand side, and started to film the crowd. And the footage that he's taking, he did photograph me. You can see it on the 2003 DVD. So there's some footage that Robert's taken, their manager took, their road crew took, and it's wound up on a, it's finished up on a DVD that released by Warner Vision in 2003. It's the opening track on side two, The Immigrant Song, and it's made up of a collection of little bits of film clips that the crew plus the band members took. It's a little bit blurry. As Robert was filming this, I remember quite clearly feeling, what a shame I couldn't get up there and tell him to not pan so fast, because it's a little bit blurry. He was new to a camera. They just picked them up in Singapore. They were going there to play in Singapore before they played in Australia, but they weren't let into the country because their hair was too long. And he was asked about that at the press reception, I remember, and he said, well, they're clearing all the long heads out of Singapore and out of Bali. So he made a few mentions. He took it in a jovial manner, but he was talking about being long haired and being banned from the country. So they did buy a few Super 8 movie cameras while they were there, and they used them when they came to Sydney.
It does look very kind of rough and raw, the surroundings, the stage itself, the scaffolding, the old army tent. I'm just trying to take myself back into that situation and what the experience would have been like. You know, to our eyes these days, it has none of the technical trappings of the big concerts that we expect. But at the same time, it looks as if it had all of the energy and skill and talent that was needed.
Yes, that's correct. It wouldn't pass work cover approval nowadays. It's a pretty rough and ready sort of stage. They had a few planks to run up and a kind of handrail. It's all made out of scaffolding, the stage, and there's a bit of a tarpaulin over the top. So it was physically pretty rough and ready, but that was pretty standard for the day. but the quality of the music was superb and their playing was brilliant. They've got Marshall amps, so the sound system was pretty good. Good sound, pretty ordinary stage setting from our point of view, but it was what you did in the 1970s.
What time of day was it? Was it late afternoon?
The concert went for 3 hours. It started at 2 o'clock and finished precisely at 5 o'clock.
So, Ted, we have in front of us a photograph that's almost a mural size, takes up a big slab of wall, Led Zeppelin in acoustic mode. Tell us about the band as they did these acoustic versions of some of their songs.
Well, they just sat down on chairs, three of the players. John Paul Jones is on the left, Robert Plant is on the in the middle, he's got his hands cupped around the microphone, and Jimmy Page is playing an acoustic guitar with an electric pickup on it, just taped on. And John Bonham is playing drums, and his personal roadie is just standing behind him. There's a large gong that John Bonham used to play. And yeah, he's just in a gentle mood there. His head's up. He quite often was thumping away so much it's a bit hard to get him with his head up, but he's looking up, just tapping gently to, I think it's Going to California, this particular song they're playing in the photo. It's about 4 metres long by a metre high, so it's pretty big impact. It's about two-thirds life size, not quite two-thirds. So it was originally designed to place up high on the wall so that when you walk in you get the impression that Led Zeppelin are actually sitting on stage at the end of the hall. It was also, because they'd played for 3 hours, very important to sit down and have a bit of a breather. And John Paul Jones said that they used to look forward to the acoustic set.
I mean, John Paul Jones is playing the mandolin there. The mandolin has been used several times by rock bands since, like REM. But I guess Led Zeppelin were one of the first rock bands to really incorporate the mandolin as an essential part of some of their songs.
Yes, well, the great thing about Led Zeppelin, they'd try lots and lots of different things, and the mandolin is one of the things that they used. And they used to try all sorts of things.
So here we have Jimmy Page getting a little more experimental with his guitar, playing it with a violin bow.
Yes, this is Jimmy's classic Dazed and Confused, and yeah, it was a great piece, and he uses a violin bow. They are very intimate shots, way up close, a lot of concentration on some of the shots, and then him wildly whipping the violin bow into the air and then coming back and attacking the guitar. Yeah, he used the bow with great effect. It was the first time we'd seen anything like that in Australia.
Ted, I just want to have a look at some of the photos of the actual crowd as a contrast. So here we have images looking back onto the crowd and the one of the big stands at the Sydney Showground. It's packed and it looks absolutely intense and it looks like the Wild West.
Yeah, it does a little bit. It's absolutely sea of people, jam-packed, standing on railings, on buildings. Just wall to wall, as far as you can see, there were people. The interesting thing too, at the time, the ticket was $4 for a 3-hour concert.
Now the crowd looks, in stark contrast to the people of today, I guess. I mean, you would look at this and say the great unwashed, but this is what life was like back then, wasn't it? I mean, people weren't manicured. guys did have long, greasy hair. Can you just try and put us back into that situation in amongst the crowd and how it felt and how different it would be to the same experience we would have today?
Yeah, well, it'd be totally different than today. A lot of long-haired guys there, people wearing top hats, headbands. Yeah, it was a real sort of hippie days. And the great unwashed, yeah, some of them were unwashed. They had all sorts of clothes on, colourful clothes. It was a real sort of reaction to their parents' generation. Parents would have been horrified by the way these people looked. It's pretty 70s, pretty typical 70s. Some of the fashion features, the big sunglasses are back in again, but Australia is more sophisticated now than in the 70s. We've lost some of the innocence, and some things are good and some things are definitely not as good as they were in the 70s.
I mean, Australia in 1972, it wasn't really out there, was it? There were still many aspects of Australian culture then that were very staid and conservative.
That's exactly right. This was a sleepy Sunday afternoon in Sydney, and nothing happened on the weekend. Saturday lunchtime, it all closed if it was open on Saturday. So Saturday afternoon, Sunday, there was nothing open. Maybe a milk bar here or there. And concerts like these and happenings and events attracted young people. Yeah, it was a different world. It's not a 24/7 world. It was definitely 8 hours a day world.
It's quite ironic in a way, isn't it? This was a Sydney that was pretty much dead on the weekend, but yet here is an event unfolding that a lot of people today would give their right arm to be at and that you would probably not see happen in Sydney like this again.
Yes, that's certainly true, and a lot of people wish they were there, and even the recent Led Zeppelin concert in London, I got an email from somebody who was there. He said it was a fantastic concert, but not as good as Sydney 72, and he's probably right.
Ted, I just want to... The image right behind us here, quite a large photograph of Robert Plant in all his glory. It's a fantastic photo.
He's actually wearing a girl's top. It's quite a nice top, sort of a jacket, very colourful, very hippish type, a big buckled belt, and he's actually singing Stairway to Heaven at this time, and he's pointing up to heaven with his right hand. A very classic Robert Plant pose. And I'm pleased with that photo. That's a nice photo.
It's beautiful, really, and he's both very masculine and feminine in quite a courageous way, isn't he?
Yes, he's got long, curly hair. I'm sure many girls would die for hair as good as that, but very much a man, and really dominated the stage and knew who he was. And the amazing thing is they were just so young. They were only a few years and they were in school a few years earlier, and they're all in school. This is quite amazing that at age 24 he's up here controlling the crowds, and just the music they were producing was phenomenal.
Ted, at this point in the interview I want to ask you, with such sensational images of Led Zeppelin, how come they haven't been around for 35 years? How come they've only just re-emerged? Where have you kept them?
Well, I thought I'd lost them forever, actually. How it happened is a couple of years ago, a friend of mine, two friends independently, just said, I understand you took photos of Led Zeppelin. I said, yes, that's right. They said, well, we want to see them. And I had a look around at the time, but I just couldn't find any negatives. I could find my original proof sheets and one odd photograph that I had put aside, just a small photograph. Oh, and a couple of coloured ones as well. But I had a good look for the original negatives, and I just couldn't find them. I just figured that I'd lost them over the years. And sometime later, I was having a big spring clean out and going through some boxes ready to take them to the tip. I looked into the bottom of the box and I couldn't believe my eyes. There were the negatives in the bottom of the box. What they were doing there, I don't know. I was quite shocked. So that's where it started. And then I just wondered if anyone was really interested in seeing them. I rang up the local paper and mentioned that I'd found these Led Zeppelin photos, and the local Byron News, I live up north coast of New South Wales, the Byron Echo, and I said, look, I found some Led Zeppelin photos. Do you think you'd be interested in doing a story? And he says, you found some Led Zeppelin photos? And I thought they were having a go at me. I've said the wrong thing here. I thought they think I'm a bit of an idiot or something like that. And they sent a reporter around and did a piece, and I didn't think a gallery show was going to be on the agenda, but a friend of mine did suggest that I should do that, and so I approached Stephen Alderton from the Lismore Gallery. He's a very progressive gallery director, and he seized on the idea. We came up with a one-night photo show, It'll be heading overseas to the UK, to England, and to the USA. I think there'll be a tremendous amount of interest in the USA.
Now, Ted, we're seeing the images 35 years later, but I believe some of the Led Zeppelin guys saw some of the prints at the time. Tell us about that experience of going to see them a few days after the concert with some of the prints.
Yes, well, what happened is I printed up some photos, and I thought these are pretty good. Maybe I just drop around to Zeppelin and give them a few copies. And so I went around to the Siebel townhouse where they were staying. I asked the receptionist where they were, what floor they were on. She said the third floor, and I said, what room numbers? And she said the whole third floor. So I just picked the door, knocked on the door. A friend of mine opened the door, and I went inside, and Peter Grant, the manager, and Richard Cole, the tour manager, were in the room, and we had a bit of a chat. And I just said, where's the lads? And they pointed next door. So I went and knocked on the door and went in to see Robert and Jimmy, and Bonzo were there, and struck up a conversation, talked a bit about the concert, talked about quite a few things. And I showed Robert the photos, and he was particularly taken with the photos. He actually said to me they were the best photos that anyone had taken of them in the world. Then he went on to say he wished I'd been able to go to Auckland with them and photograph the New Zealand show. So Robert said to me, how about a walk, and go for a bit of a stroll? And I said, yeah, I'll be up for that. So we walked downstairs. As soon as we hit the street, he started singing at the top of his voice. And I thought, oh, no, people will look. You know, this is a mental thing that went on. And actually, nobody bothered to turn around or look to where the noise was coming, or nobody approached him or approached us. We just wandered around the cross. And on our little wander, we came across a dumped Plymouth car. And the emblem on the Plymouth car was a Viking's head. And Robert spotted the Viking's head on this dumped car, whipped his pocket knife out and tried to pry it off the car. And I was thinking, oh, gee, this is a bit of a dodgy thing to be doing. The police could see us and they'll think we were doing something wrong. And he tried, and tried as much as he could. He couldn't actually get it off the car. And he said, I'll send the chauffeur down later to get it. And I said, that's an excellent idea, Robert. Let's keep on walking. So we walked up, and I remember the Alamein Fountain, and, you know, just wandered around a bit and came back. While I was there, they had a stack of LPs that they'd been listening to, long play records. There must have been, oh, I don't know, 30 of them, 40 of them there. And Robert said, you know, take the records. And I said, oh, man, there's too many there for me to carry. Thanks for the offer. I said, I might just pick a few out, which I did. I said, won't you take them? He said, no, we're just going to leave them here and hotel staff can have them. So I took a few LPs, sort of threw them and took a few. And, yeah, he's a very generous fellow. He offered me the lot.
I mean, Led Zeppelin, maybe a few years later, were famous for their antics in hotel rooms, TV sets out the window into the pool, that sort of thing. But it sounds like you had a fairly pleasant afternoon with the lads.
Yeah, they were pretty relaxed. It was actually a morning. That afternoon, they did get on a plane and go out to Brisbane. Robert said, jump in the car and come out to the airport with them. I didn't end up going out. I had some other stuff to do. But they played Brisbane that night. Although, while they were here, John Bonham did chuck a TV out the window, aimed for the swimming pool, and got into a bit of a punch-up here and there with various people he said the wrong thing to.
And there's quite a few paintings in the in this exhibition, this version of the exhibition, younger artists reacting to your images and also to Led Zeppelin and their music. Do you think that that's a way of carrying on the, I guess, the artistic legacy of what you've been doing and what Led Zeppelin have done through their music?
Yes, I really appreciate some other artists joining in and also contributing to the show and their reflections on Led Zeppelin. Some of Australia's leading artists have jumped on board, and we appreciate that their enthusiasm to support the project and to the show.
Ted, thanks very much for sharing your memories and your photographs with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for interviewing me.
Ted, we're standing here in front of some black and white photographs from Brazil, and this highlights an aspect of the of your Led Zeppelin exhibition, which is not just to bring the photographs of Led Zeppelin to a new audience, but it's all in a good cause as well. Can you tell us about the cause?
Yes, I figured that if bands could get together and call themselves Band Aid and raise money to help people, that if I call myself Rock Photo Aid, that I also could raise money to help children. And what I'm aiming at is children living in extreme poverty. I've picked Brazil, and we've already started from the very first show. We've got a photo here of the girl that we're supporting, so she'll be supported for many years into the future.
Now, Ted, for people who can't yet get along to the Led Zeppelin exhibition, how can they support Rock Photo Aid? Do you have a website, for instance?
Yes, I do have a website called rockphotoaid.com. We're not actually asking for donations. I do have a few things that I've been selling. I've got a limited number of T-shirts. We do have some posters. And we do have some very limited number of Led Zeppelin prints. They are quite expensive. There's only 50 of them of each image available around the world, up to 50. Some of the very large images, there's only five. And we're sort of taking from the fans, or the people that are prepared to pay the money. They're good quality photos. They'll hold their value. But I'm donating all the profits from those photographic sales to help children in Brazil. It goes through Compassion Australia. And what I want to do is raise $500,000 to have a living sponsorship to sponsor 100 children for a 10-year period. That's 1,000 years of sponsorship, child sponsorship in these child development programs to give children a hope and a future. And poverty stops in these child development programs. So it's really making a difference in Brazil.
Ted, good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.